Chapter 17 Boarding School in Hong Kong. I knew the Shillings were leaving Hong Kong for Geneva on Thursday morning, so I got up early and hovered around the front door, hoping Father would take me along when he left to drive them to the pier. But he was in a rush, and I was too shy to say anything. The result was I never got to say goodbye. 2 days later, an hour after lunch on Saturday afternoon, the maid Agam knocked on our door. I opened it softly and placed my finger against my lips because Yeye was taking his afternoon nap. She whispered that Nyang wanted me to pack my bag immediately because I was being taken away. Father was at the office, and little sister was attending a birthday party. Nyang, fourth brother and I, climbed into the back seat of Father's Studebaker. I didn't know where they were taking me and dared not ask. In the car, fourth brother deliberately snubbed me. He was playing with Nyang's diamond ring, twisting it round and round her finger. I envied his privilege and freedom as he nonchalantly positioned her finger this way and that, trying to catch the sun's rays. She looked on indulgently while I sat primly in my corner, with my back straight and my skirt pulled down, hoping to be unnoticed. I knew fourth brother was angry at me because of what had happened earlier. Yeye had a habit of going into the living room at 8 o'clock every morning to read the newspapers before breakfast. His sight was failing, and he liked the bright sunlight at that hour. To my surprise, I caught a glimpse of fourth brother lurking furtively in the hallway. I thought, it's Saturday, and there's no school. Besides, fourth brother hates to get up early. What is he up to? Now Yeye was shuffling slowly from the hall towards the half-open door of the living room. I happened to look up and suddenly spotted a pile of thick encyclopedias propped precariously on the door's upper ledge, lying in wait, like their perpetrator, fourth brother, to fall on Yeye's shaven head. I was seized by a sudden rage. It was a sizzling hot day, but I felt a chill within. In a flash, I lurched forward, overtook Yeye, and pushed the door open violently. Three heavy volumes crashed to the floor, narrowly missing our heads and landing with a loud bang. "Mind your own business!" His plans thwarted, and beside himself with fury, fourth brother was screaming at me at the top of his lungs. "Gwendan! Get lost! Drop dead!" "How mean you are!" a voice declared. We both turned to see the tiny figure of little sister, arms akimbo, glaring at fourth brother from the doorway of her room. Before either of us could react, father rushed out in his bathrobe. Grasping the situation at once, he hesitated briefly. I saw his face, half turned towards fourth brother and half turned to return to his room. "Pick up the books," he commanded finally in a stern voice. "Such a racket. Don't you know your mother is still sleeping? Keep your voices down when you play. That goes for all three of you." And that was all. Afterwards, Ye and I sat by ourselves on the long couch, not saying a word. I looked at my grandfather, defeated and resigned, with a blanket around his drooping shoulders in the blistering heat. His face contorted with sadness and anguish. A tired old man with no one to turn to. Imprisoned by his love for his only son, my father. I closed my eyes and made him a promise. I didn't dare say it out loud, but I wished very hard over and over. It's bound to get better. One day, things will be different. Life won't go on like this forever. I don't know when, how, or what, but I'll come back and rescue you from this. I promise. In the car, fourth brother demanded to have afternoon tea at the posh Peninsula Hotel. We stopped there, though I felt sick to my stomach, besieged with unknown fears, but too afraid to utter a single word. As we approached the grand entrance, I spied a little girl standing forlornly beside a man kneeling on the ground with his head bowed. Both were in rags. On the pavement was a sheet of paper describing their miseries and a plea for help. The child had a large placard hanging around her neck on which was written, "My name is Feng San San. I am for sale." In the cool, luxurious lounge on the ground floor of the hotel, there was a long line of Chinese customers waiting to be seated for afternoon tea. The head waiter was writing down their names in a large leather-bound appointment book. Fourth brother had run ahead and was in the process of giving his name. As I approached with Niang, I heard the head waiter repeating in Chinese, "Last name is Yan. Party of three. Looks like half an hour's wait, I'm afraid." Meanwhile, Niang was impatiently checking the time on her gold Rolex watch. Haughtily, she demanded in English to be seated immediately. "My name is Prosperi," she proclaimed in her best European accent. "We are in a great hurry." With one sweeping glance, the head waiter took in Yang's French designer suit, alligator handbag, matching shoes, and 7-carat diamond ring. "Of course, madam," he said, without any change of expression, while leading us past the long queue to sit at a table by the window. After all, Hong Kong was a British colony. White people took precedence over the native population and went automatically to the head of every line, wherever that might be. After tea, we crossed the harbor by ferry and drove past an impressive building, Governor's House, which was surrounded by lush green lawns and guarded by tall English soldiers. Our car stopped at a large school building perched halfway up a slope. A sign outside said, "Sacred Heart School and Orphanage." Two foreign nuns in white habits greeted us. Niang and fourth brother followed them into a conference room, while I was left outside in the hall. Nobody was around, and there was nothing to read except the school brochure lying on the table. Surely, they couldn't fault me for perusing that. I found out there were 1,200 students enrolled at Sacred Heart, of whom 65 were boarders. The rest were day girls. More ominously, Sacred Heart also had an orphanage for unwanted daughters abandoned by their parents. I felt my heart pounding as I pondered my fate. I told myself, the danger is very real. Nyang loathes me. As for father, he doesn't really care. He hardly knows I exist, remembering neither my name nor my date of birth. To him, I don't matter. Finally, after 1.5 hours, they emerged together. To my astonishment, Nyang actually introduced me with a smile to Mother Mary and Mother Louisa. I thought, is this part of her trick to abandon me in the orphanage where I would cost her nothing? I had better concentrate on what she's saying. Good heavens! She is congratulating me on my good luck because the sisters are making an exception. I am being admitted as a boarder even though it's the middle of the school year. Did she say boarder? My heart is singing, and I can hardly believe my good luck. There is a God, after all.